Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to Inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com and now on KNBR.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Rita's of Hayward, serving Italian ice and frozen custard. Today for our postseason special, we'll talk to John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle after the Giants beat the Mets 3-0 in the wild card game. Well, John, a thrilling 3-0 win for the San Francisco Giants in the wild card game at Citi Field in New York. And what an atmosphere they had there. What a matchup it was. And it really lived up to its billing, which you don't always see. In fact, many times you don't see a game live up to its billing as far as the pitching matchup. But Noah Syndergaard and Madison Bumgarner trading zeros all the way to the ninth inning. I mean, it was just fabulous. First of all, just your thoughts on a game like that, just edge of your seat type baseball.
I don't know how we're going to survive October. The Toronto-Baltimore game, the next day, the New York-San Francisco game, this is unbelievable stuff. And if this is an indication of what's to come, look out.
It really is.
You're right. Yeah, this was an absolute gem of a pitching duel, you know, an all-timer. And am I a little surprised Syndergaard comes out after the seventh? Well, a little bit. I mean, shoot, you're the guy, and you want to get as far as you can. You know, Bumgarner was. I mean, nobody's even warming up. You know, maybe Romo at the end there. Cueto was stretching a little bit, but I mean, Bochy has 10 guys in the bullpen. There was no way he was going to do anything with Bumgarner except just let it ride.
No, and that's the advantage that the Giants have, is that no matter what the pitch count, it seems like Bumgarner's just going to keep on going. And give the Giants credit earlier in the game, even though they couldn't really touch Syndergaard, you know, and they had a few chances here and there, but they did drive up his pitch count a little bit to the point where, you know, he's just not going to go any deeper. And that seems to be a big key for most teams except the Giants and Bumgarner. You know, once Syndergaard reaches over 100 pitches, they're not going to go over that really. And you know, it's not that Reed is a bad pitcher, but or Familia, who gives up the home run, but they're not Syndergaard with the way he throws, with the 10 strikeouts that he had in seven innings.
And that's probably what shortened his night, seven innings. That's fantastic. But 108 pitches, 10 strikeouts. He had more swings and misses than he has had all season. It was upward in the neighborhood of 20. And he was fantastic. But the problem was all those strikeouts meant longer at bats. Meanwhile, Bumgarner, seven pitch first inning, seven pitch second inning, seven pitch third, 21 pitches in three innings. It's unbelievable. I mean, that's the epitome of efficiency.
Right.
And therefore, he could have a longer fourth inning. I think it was 28 pitches. So what? 21 plus 20. I mean, you're still in a good rhythm to go the distance. Had a couple more shorter innings. And he's just shut down stuff by the eighth and ninth. It was all over. You give him three runs. That's way too many for that guy.
Yeah,
You know, I had mentioned that he was going to ride it out with Bumgarner no matter what, Bochy. But hey, there was a chance that he could have come out of the game in that inning as a pinch hitter. So some favorable things happened late in the game for Bumgarner to stay in.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Well, you look at the ninth inning, and Crawford gets that double. If Joe Panik doesn't draw the walk, you're right. I mean, maybe they pinch hit for Madison Bumgarner there, but he does draw that walk because they, you know, they probably if he doesn't draw that walk and he makes an out, they probably walk. They probably walk Connor Gillespie to get to the pitcher spot, and then right there you pinch hit for him. But it doesn't happen that way. Big walk there for Joe Panik. And then let's talk about Connor Gillespie, because I mean, he's not even supposed to be the starting third baseman. It's supposed to be Nunez. and he's hurt. He's not on the roster. So here's Gillespie. And I'll give my brother Tom some credit for this. He called me and he said, "What is it with the Giants? You know, Marco Scudero, Travis Ishikawa." And I started thinking, you know, you're right. It just seems like a guy who you don't expect just comes up with a big hit. And Gillespie's not the guy that you expect to be the hero. But there he was in his first postseason game with the Giants. And he's just, you know, so excited going around the bases. That's a great story.
And don't forget Cody Ross in 10.
Cody Ross, another guy.
You mentioned Scudero in 12 and Ishikawa in 14. Now
right.
Now we've got Gillespie in 16.
Right.
I mean, he was deep down on the depth chart at third base. You remember Matt Duffy?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then Nunez came aboard before they trade Duffy. And so they have an automatic guy. They slot in over at third. And very good base runner. Better than we thought defensively. And, you know, he hit here and there. But with Syndergaard, it was a big minus for him not to be on the roster, because he's the one big stolen base threat. And that's sort of the one negative for Syndergaard, is keeping guys on. You know, Span ran a couple times, was thrown out once, which seemed odd. But anyway, that's debatable. But with Nunez, you know, he's out, and so that opens the door for Gillespie. And you can go through all of this. Well, how did Cody Ross get in? Well, you remember there's an instance where suddenly there's a drug bust, and now we're not going to use our guy. And then the following time, Marco Scudero was acquired in a trade from Colorado because Sandoval was injured and they needed a guy for a little bit at third. Well, then he becomes the second baseman and the LCS MVP and right. The guy in the postseason. And then Ishikawa, of course, the shot heard around China Basin, the walk-off in the LCS that got him into another World Series. I mean, my goodness, all these guys who really on the outskirts, you know, not an inner circle player at all, and just added to the roster because of something that happens to somebody else, and now we have Gillespie. And you remember Gordon Beckham down the stretch, they got him for the final week in a funky trade. And say, well, how are we going to do this? Well, we needed him because the Dodgers were going to throw a couple of key lefties, so he got those at bats. But Gillespie, I mean, we saw what he did Sunday, you know, diving into the photo well,
right.
And, you know, getting these key hits with the bases loaded and doing all these things that were just totally unexpected. And this is an old Giant draft pick who had a contract. And this is kind of a shame, because this really set him back. And, it's, you know, shame on the Giants and shame on him and his agent for negotiating a deal that guaranteed a Major League roster spot, like, in his second season once September rolled around. So
he wasn't ready,
up.
Right?
He wasn't ready. The veterans didn't appreciate that. He just got a gift and a pass to the big leagues, the manager. And he was kind of cocky. He admits now that he was immature. It just wasn't a good fit. You should never have a guy just thrown up to the majors, not deserved. And that's what happened to him. So anyway, next thing you know, he's on the White Sox, and you don't hear from him again for years. And then he's out of a job, and he comes calling. And, you know, it's a story that's happened before with Ryan Vogelsong, a former Giant, goes away for years and then comes back and he becomes a star. Now, Vogelsong was an all-star, and he was a huge difference maker in the postseason. And this is just, you know, a little sample size here, but it's still pretty legendary.
Yeah, and like Vogelsong, he started the year in AAA, although I think with Vogelsong, he made maybe one start in AAA, and then boom, he was up. Gillespie was in AAA at the beginning of the year for a little while, and then he gets his chance to be on the team, and he's been valuable. I remember I was talking recently with Tim Flannery about how he has this quick swing, you know, this short swing, and that's really valuable off the bench, but, you know, in this situation, coming up and hitting that home run, he got to that one quickly. I mean, it's a guy who throws in the mid-90s in Familia, and he hits that home run. And I also was going to bring up, John, that in spring training, I talked to Gillespie about, you know, what was it about that first time around, and he just said he wasn't a good teammate. You know, he learned about being a good teammate. And, boy, I mean, his teammates now love him after what he did today.
Yeah, and I guess Peavy tells the story that after the home run, he comes into the dugout and Bumgarner is just real casually says, hey, you know, thanks for picking me up, you know, and then just walks away with, you know, just some little tiny remark that you would hear in mid-June, you know, not just no big bear hug and, you know, shouting at each other and hitting each other, but it was just a you know, kind remark. Hey, thanks, man. And and that's kind of Gillespie anyway. He's been in the clubhouse, but you hardly notice him. The first time he talked at length at all was after the Sunday game, after the clincher, in which he had a big game. And I think he talked more than anybody. And I was stunned because one wave of media after another came along and asked him questions, many times the same questions, and he was there to the bitter end, sometimes losing time in the celebration and hanging out with teammates. He was over chatting with reporters. So it's kind of a neat ride. I mean, these are obviously the biggest games of his career, you know, the most meaningful. And he's playing this role that was totally unexpected, and it's just a great story.
More with John Shea in just a moment. We all know the Giants season has fluctuated between being very hot and, well, just after the All-Star break, cold. At least they're not boring. So what about your dessert experience lately? Same old, same old? How about trying a unique, refreshing frozen dessert from Rita's Ice of Hayward? Rita's is sure to please everyone, offering sugar-free, dairy-free, and all-natural treats. Over 70 flavors of Italian ice to choose from, and 8 flavors of their award-winning frozen custard. The combinations are endless, and this is a cold experience Giants fans can embrace. When you stop by Rita's Ice of Hayward at 26775 Hayward Boulevard, be sure to mention the Sports Virus, and you'll receive one free regular-size Italian ice with a purchase. Rita's Ice of Hayward, Italian ice and frozen custard. Just touching on what you brought up with Denard Span and the stolen base, at the time it looked like that might be a really costly situation. And it looked to me, John, I mean, you're watching that live, and it looked like, okay, he got his foot in there before the tag. That's a bad call. And the Giants asked for the replay challenge. And on the replay challenge, I thought, yeah, well, he's definitely safe. His foot's in there. The only thing that maybe you could say is that he might have slipped off the bag a little bit there in between his foot and then his leg getting on it. But it was really hard to tell, and they do not reverse that call. I was pretty surprised. I don't understand replay sometimes. If you're not going to get the call right, and I mean, maybe I'm not noticing something there, that he was off the bag for a split second. I don't know, but that was a tough one to not have go your way at the time.
I don't think he was off for a split second. I think he was on the entire time.
I thought so.
It was a real night. I mean, he slid on his back and stayed on his back and never let go of the bag, didn't surpass the bag, and it seemed everybody who saw the play, you could even hear groans from the Citi Field crowd, like, oh, shoot, he's safe, you know. And, you know, I mean, do you say, oh, the umpire's got it wrong, even with replay? I don't know. It's the group in New York, which probably right down the street from the ballpark. I'm not saying it's a homer call. I mean, they can't obviously do that, but
no.
This whole replay thing is something they really need to look at. You know, the length, the process, the results, and how they judge it. It's you know, they got the foot in the door, but they really got to get this more precise and cleaner, and maybe, you know, take away some calls, add in some calls, and just make it more comprehensive all the way around so those things don't happen.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you're watching it live, and you get to see he gets his foot in before the tag. And then when you watch the replay at, you know, sort of a normal speed, looks like he's in there. Now, if you freeze it and you zoom in and do all that, you know, that's a whole different ball game. So, you know, I just don't know why we're going in that direction. But let's get back to Madison Bumgarner. And one of the keys I thought in this game for him, and he's just unbelievable. When you know, you think about him in elimination games, shutting out the Pirates, and then what he did against the Royals, and then now this. I mean, it just keeps adding up. And one of the keys I thought was the way that he faced Yoenis Cespedes, because Cespedes looked like he'd be the key hitter for the Mets tonight to put some runs on the board, maybe hit one out of the ballpark. But it was just brilliant the way Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner worked him. And they pointed it out a lot on the telecast, working him up. That's not his hot zone. And the way that Bumgarner was able to command that against Cespedes was pretty remarkable, I thought. What'd you think?
Yeah, and it's amazing the control he has on that elevated fastball. We saw it back in the final out of the Game 7 of the series a couple years ago in Kansas City with Salvador Perez. And you know, certain guys just can't get up there and hit that ball. And Cespedes is one of them. He loves the low fastball. And Bumgarner wasn't biting. And anything low would be in the dirt, breaking stuff in the dirt. And Cespedes is a very aggressive hitter, we all know from his days in Oakland. And he's maintained that, and that's what's made him so good. He's strong, he's aggressive, he's powerful, and he likes the stuff low and in, and he can knock that stuff out of the park easy. And Bumgarner was giving him everything high, just tip of the zone or higher, and 0-for-4 and 2 strikeouts. I mean, that was huge. He's by far their most lethal hitter. You know, sometimes how he goes, they go. He and Granderson came off the DL August 19th, and from August 20th on, the Mets had the best record in the big leagues. And Cespedes, like he was last year down this stretch, was a big figure in this Mets rebound. They were basically a 500 team back on the 19th of August. And with Cespedes leading the charge, my goodness, they were the hottest team among the Giants and Cardinals and Mets, you know, going in those last few days there. And look at them now. They're gone just like St. Louis is gone. And Collins, Terry Collins spoke about it afterward and was a little bit stunned the way Bumgarner just dominated his best hitter.
Yeah, I think even after the game, Bumgarner, as much confidence as he has, he was maybe even a little surprised that he could pull this off against Syndergaard the way it went. I mean, I know he has the ultimate confidence, but in his interview with Buster Olney, he didn't even know how to answer some of those questions about, you know, his legacy. He said something to Buster about how, you know, why are you asking me these tough questions?
Yeah.
Didn't want to be involved in those kind of questions. That was funny.
Yeah, and he did it the day before in the news conference, you know, when the pitchers and the managers, starting pitchers, always talk the day before their start in the postseason. And you know, two or three of the questions says, man, that's too high. I don't have enough time to answer that question. It's his way of just saying, I don't know, I'm not going to answer that question. But that was pretty funny. And then in the interview room after he left the field, you know, he was asked more about, you know, precise innings and strategy and things. You know, those 21 pitches in the first three innings, 7-7-7,
yeah,
19 of them were fastballs. So, you know, he was doing nothing. He wasn't, no breaking stuff, nothing fancy. He was just hitting the spots and mowing them down in quick fashion. And then in the fourth inning, fifth inning, then he started mixing them up. And the second time through the lineup, the Mets just didn't adjust. They never adjusted. And, you know, by the end, they were just confused. I mean, they were just rolling over, making easy outs. And here we are again. Bumgarner, three elimination games in his career in the postseason, has not given up a run. And
that's amazing, yeah.
These are, this wild card, the wild card from 2 years ago, and, of course, that five-inning save in Game 7 of the series in Kansas City a couple years ago.
So maybe he isn't surprised at all. Although if he's not locked in like that, then, you know, this year he had some outings where he wasn't so great. But when he's locked in like that, I guess he's just going to think, you know, I've got this game. I'm going to shut them out, and there's nothing you can do about it as long as we can score a run. And it looked like the Giants weren't going to be able to do that. They had that great opportunity when Brandon Belt hit one of the wall. And I wanted to talk about that catch because Curtis Granderson What a catch on Belt. I mean, it looked like it was going to go to the wall. He wasn't going to be able to catch it. You know, maybe it was a home run. He goes back to the 408 marker, makes a spectacular catch that had people on Twitter talking about Willie Mays. I wasn't one of them. I was more thinking about Tommy Agee in 1969, for those of us old enough to remember that catch he had where he kind of juggled it at the wall in center at Shea Stadium. That's what after a long run, kind of reminded me of that.
And this is a fellow who was the right fielder and did the Mets a big favor by moving to center. Cespedes just is not a center fielder. He moved over to left, and that really solidified their outfield. And then they, you know, brought Jay Bruce later on in the season. He didn't get hot until the final days. But Granderson had a real nice year. You know, the former Yankee, the veteran, he's been around forever in New York, played on both teams. But that play was pretty impressive. In the land of Mays, you know, he went back. Now, this wall was at 408, and he caught it at the base of the wall, bumped into the wall, made a great catch. That was the third out, okay, right? And end of inning. So, yeah, people on Twitter and social media, hey, man, Mays, come on. Mays was at the Polo Grounds. Mays was game one of the World Series. And I was in the booth the other day when, you know, talking about name dropping, when Willie Mays and Vince Scully were having a conversation.
That was pretty cool, yeah.
And I happened to video some of their conversation, and they brought up the catch, and Vinny brought up the catch. And he told Willie, you know, it was 483 feet from the plate to the center field wall, which was the wall for the clubhouse out there, and there was a monument, 483 feet. And he told Willie, you made that catch of Vic Wertz in game one, the momentum-changing, you know, history-making catch at the Polo Ground, at least 440 feet. 440 feet. And not only did he make the catch, but he made a fantastic turnaround and throw to, you know, when Al Rosen had to go back to first base. But it was magnificent, and it was captured on black and white, and it was the best catch of all time, though Willie says it's more like my second or third best catch. So people don't know what they're talking about if they say that's Mays-like, because, first of all, it wasn't the World Series. Second of all, it wasn't at the Polo Grounds, 440-plus feet from the plate. It was only, you know, 400 because he ran into the wall at 408. And, you know, there was no throw that followed it. Those comparisons were silly. But it was still a great play.
One more thing, John. I think if Granderson were like Willie Mays, he would have hit his hand into his glove before he made the catch.
Yeah.
Because that's what Willie did. Even if it was an amazing catch, he was telling you, I'm going to catch this. Remember, he hit his hand into his glove.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess his teammates always said if he ever did that, he knew he was going to make the catch.
Right.
and then he told teammates, yeah, I had it all the way.
By the way, since you mentioned the Vin Scully, you know, last game, I mean, that was really something special. It was a real treat watching the telecast here in the San Francisco Bay Area and have him on for an inning, and he told the story about Russ Hodges and how he got the recording of the home shot heard round the world, the Bobby Thompson home run call that somebody just called his house and had it recorded, some Dodger fan, and otherwise he never would have gotten it. And just that, and just hearing his voice, it was really cool. It was a great send-off, and you were there for that. It really must have been something.
Yeah, and like I said, it was Saturday when I actually, with Willie, walked into the booth and documented the conversation and took some cool pictures that I'll never forget, and you know, the video that we posted on our websites. But and then the next day, of course, was the big one because it was the finale. You know, 67 years in the booth, 80 years since the day he was an 8-year-old walking home from school and became a Giant fan because of the 1936 World Series and the 18-4 spanking the Yankees handed the Giants, and that day he became a Giant fan, felt sorry for him. Then 80 years later to the day, he calls his final game October 2nd, 2016. So during, you know, I guess the Bay Area plugged into the third inning, and I was listening to the entire game with this app I have, a Major League app. So I heard his, in fact, I probably the last month I heard most of his calls. I said, man, there's only a few days left. I mean, I'm going to turn down everybody else. Listen to Vinny here. And often when, you know, they went to, you know, they played the Padres or the Rockies, I was still listening to Vinny. But so during the final broadcast, he talks about, you know, this is right when Mays again was in the booth on Sunday, and they put up that plaque in the visitors' TV booth that will always be there that acknowledges Vinny's last call, right then and there. You know, they gave him a picture of Mel Ott, his boyhood hero, and the ticket stub from Mel Ott's 500th home run, all in a picture frame. So anyway, he was a little shaken up, a little emotional. And after that half inning, he got on the air and said, I'm touched. And, you know, he actually said that when the Giants go to New York, and it wasn't even a done deal because St. Louis hadn't lost or won. The Giants hadn't won to clinch it. I think it was only 4-0, but he's pretty confident the Giants were going to beat his Dodgers.
Right.
He said, when they go to New York, I'm going to root for them. And he said, darn right. So Vinny was rooting for the Giants, the dreaded Giants, the rival Giants, in the wild card game in New York, where his career started, where he grew up. And, you know, talk about full circle, huh? He grew up a Giant fan, called the Dodgers for 67 years, and in his final broadcast he said he was going to root for the Giants. Now, he did not say who he was going to root for if the Giants and Dodgers meet in the LCS.
I got to imagine it'd be Dodgers, and that could happen, but there's a big hurdle to jump over first for the San Francisco Giants, because they've got to play the best team in baseball, the Cubs, who have a major jinx sitting here, because, I mean, I just got my Sports Illustrated, and on the cover it says Cubs win 1908 World Series, crossed out 2016 World Series. So they've already got this jinx just sitting there, best record, all that, over 100 years. But, you know, it's just a great matchup when you think about it, because even though the Giants didn't have a great second half, they have a number of players on this team that just know how to win when it comes to October. And it's right off the bat an outstanding matchup, because Johnny Cueto, 18-5 against John Lester, 19-5 at Wrigley on Friday. And I know you're going to be there, John. I mean, this is going to be some kind of series, at least looking at it on paper, and what you have at stake with these two franchises and what they have going on.
Every game is an incredible matchup. Kind of reminds me of 2010 when the Giants played the Phillies. Remember the Phillies' great rotation
and
the Giants countering with Lincecum and Bumgarner and Kane. And so now, you look at the first game, it's Cueto and Lester. I mean, two Cy Young Award candidates. Cueto, by the way, when the Giants were in Chicago in early September and dropped 3 out of 4 and their offense just stank up the joint. Well, Cueto pitched the final game, and you know, afterward, I don't know if you remember this, but he talked about the size of the team's coconuts.
Right, I remember
and,
that. Yeah.
which I don't need to explain. And he said, when asked if he'd like to play Chicago in the postseason, you know, a little revenge, he said, I would thank God for that. You know, at that point, we would learn all about the size of the team's coconuts. So anyway, maybe we'll know more on that. Stay tuned. But I mean, Kyle Hendricks is pitching the second game. You know, the ERA champ in all of Major League Baseball against probably Jeff Samardzija. It's PBA right now. But, you know, the ex-Cub. I mean, there's a great – in Game 3, Bumgarner and Arrieta? Are you kidding me?
At AT&T Park, right.
Yeah, that's Game 3 in San Francisco, Monday. So, and then it'll probably be Moore and Lackey. Say, okay, that's not bad, right? And then Game 5, if it happens – maybe a Cueto-Lester rematch, who knows, with Bumgarner coming out of the bullpen.
More with John Shea in just a moment.
You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at 6 Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide warranty backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscalito equals a a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive with 4 Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
Do you think the Giants have a better chance in a best of five against this Cubs team than they would have in a best of seven, you know, if it was the LCS? I mean, it's strange to think about the fact that you'd want to face the Cubs first, but do you think maybe, you know, because of the depth of the Cubs in a longer series, would they be more difficult to beat?
So maybe, you know, in the division series, the Giants, you know, they've had their share of breaks. You remember the second baseman with the Braves in 2010 making three, you know, Brooks Conrad making the three errors.
Right, right.
And then you know, in the Red Series, you know how that, you know, they game three after losing two in San Francisco, there was an E5 late in the game that allowed them to win game three, and then that sent you know, that was momentum for games four and game, you know, and then. And then, of course, the Matt Williams blunder, the managing blunder in the division series in the 2014 when the Giants played the Nationals. So it seems like the other team has done things that the Giants really took advantage of. Now, Joe Maddon is their manager, and he's pulled all the right strings. This is a fantastic team, the best team they'll play in any division series. And, I mean, they're loaded with their rotation, their bullpen, their lineup, their defense. They have no weakness.
Right.
And they're healthy and well-rested. So, you're right. Maybe if they steal a win in Chicago and they come home 1-1, you know, with Bumgarner and Moore pitching games 3 and 4, and we saw how well they played at home in that final week, winning 5 out of 6, really the only good week they had in the second half of the season.
I wonder about the bullpen. That, to me, John, is mm-hmm. the key to this series for the Giants because they didn't have to use the bullpen in the wild card game. Romo has definitely come alive to close out some games. I mean, there's no doubt Bruce Bochy now will trust him to take over the closer role, but who else does he trust in the pen in other situations during a five-game series? I mean, it's really going to be huge if the Giants can come up big there because that's something that was a huge problem in the second half of the year.
I have no idea who the main setup guys are going to be. No idea.
Right?
I mean, it took all year to figure out who's going to be the playoff closer, and I have no idea who he would use in the eighth inning or seventh inning. I mean, Smith, you know, Will Smith pitched nicely down the stretch, and you know, Lopez, of course, the veteran, but both from the left side, and then you have Law, you have Strickland. You have Contos. You know, a lot of these guys are hit and miss. And Bochy, in the three playoff runs previously, knew exactly who he was going to use, what he was going to do, because they all pretty much had pretty good years, and they all had their roles. But the Giants' closer has been solidified just in the last couple weeks. And to Romo's credit, he did save four of the Giants' last 8 regular season wins, so he was in somewhat of a groove. And I don't know, who do you think would be the setup guy?
You got to activate Jeremy Affeldt. Or, you know, you could go Schulman in the 7th, Jenkins in the 8th, and Shea in the 9th.
Well, Zach Britton is well-rested.
Zach Britton, right? He is. He's going to be well-rested the whole winter, too.
Yeah.
That was something that he never got into that game.
Yeah.
Too bad for the Orioles. Well, John, have a great trip to Chicago. We'll do something again next week here. So everybody, you know, check with us, and we'll do another podcast next week when the Giants are finished with 3 games. Hopefully, it'll be a long series. San Francisco and Chicago should be fun.
Hey, knowing these guys, we'll be hanging out through the rest of October, but you never know. You're right. The bullpen is going to be a difference maker, and if they step it up, I think they have a chance to go deep, but if not, this thing might be pretty ugly against the Cubs. Then again, the rotation, Bochy just might ride out these starters, have them all go 8 or 9 in.
Not a bad idea. All right, John. Hey, thanks, and safe travels.
We'll talk to you soon.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Join us again next week. We'll talk about the National League Division Series, Giants and Cubs. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin, our postseason edition on the sportsvirus.com and KNBR.com.